All right, folks, welcome back to the Mountain West Wire Basketball Podcast. Recording a Tuesday show, so we'll get quickly to those games momentarily. So I'll tweet it out, but listen sooner than later for the first bit. You know who it is, Jeremy Moss, Eli Betker. And welcome back. We're here, ready for basketball. We are, 6 weeks from Selection Sunday? Is that correct?
It's coming up quick. Yeah, we're at the halfway point in conference play now.
Halfway point. The scheduling is getting fine. It's the unbalanced schedule has a few quirks in it when you play teams like within a 2 week period, but who cares, right? It doesn't matter.
No, it makes it interesting.
So let's begin with this. Should we begin with the article you're writing soon, or wait till the end? Because we need to get to the games.
We can wait till the end on that.
Well, let's get to the games first. We're okay. As I mentioned 2 seconds ago, let's talk about games and sidetrack. tonight there are Tuesday. We're doing it Tuesday morning, so hopefully you guys all hear this. If not, you can either listen and laugh at our projections and picks, or say, hey, they're spot on, or listen right away. Two games tonight. I would say the biggest game, is this the most important game, Utah State at Fresno State, the rest of the way in the regular season?
Well, Utah State does host Nevada, so that could have some big implications if Utah State sixes Nevada until that point.
But are they really going?
But this one's huge.
But really? Are they going to?
I mean,
that's my point.
They're projected to win every game until then. So
yeah, KenPom has it at 50-50. So I guess second biggest game. I will say this is the most important game for the number, if you want the number two seed.
Because how about biggest game not involving Nevada?
There you go. Easy. And they're not going to catch Nevada. So you get Utah State at Fresno State. So last time they played, Fresno State won by Braxton Huggins' three-pointer with a couple seconds left. They drained it from three-point range, and they hit a lot of layups. And that was a while ago. Utah State's won 6 in a row, Eli. So they are, and they didn't lose to Colorado State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a pretty impressive comeback that Fresno State was able to manufacture against Utah State. I still like Utah State's chances tonight. I think that they've been playing better basketball of late. They've just been really taking down some lesser teams. They just destroyed UNLV and what was supposed to be a pretty competitive UNLV team. That certainly hasn't come to fruition. But I think tonight's matchup could probably go either way. Again, the first matchup that they had this season, I think, is a bit of an anomaly with Fresno State's huge comeback and the way Utah State folded at the end. They're playing more cohesive now than they were earlier in the season, so I think this should be a good one.
I think it should be. I think Grimes could, for New Mexico, had a pretty big game because he missed a bunch of three-pointers against New Mexico. He had almost 20 rebounds, 19. Add Braxton Huggins, Deshaun Taylor. Like, these two teams have a ton of great talent, obviously. Mm-hmm. And at home, we'll see who shows up because it's not like the Save Mart Center is full of fans all the time. It's not like they're.
It's getting better.
It's true. They have a PS4 Xbox giveaway this time around to get people there.
Yeah,
I think they've done that years ago. But like with this game, it's going to be huge because honestly, if you're the 2 or 3 seed, it doesn't matter. You just don't want to be the 4 seed to hold off the inevitable to play Nevada in the championship game, assuming that happens again. So say it's a big deal. It's a big deal for to see who's good, how teams are playing. But really, technically, for seeding, it just don't fall to 4, right? Don't fall behind San Diego State.
Yeah, you don't want to be in that 4 spot. And 2 versus 3, because everyone's playing on the same home floor, it doesn't really matter that much unless something strange happens and then creates a weird first-round matchup. But I think just going back to what you discussed with the individual players, Nate Grimes defending Demias Cayda and vice versa, I think will be a huge matchup because these two have been really big breakout players this year in the post. Grimes is a bit more undersized. He's about 3 inches shorter than Cayda and about 15 pounds lighter. But he's an excellent rebounder and a very good defender himself. A bit more offensive sound than Cayda, I would say. Mm-hmm. But both of these two, I would not be surprised if they ended up with a double-double. And I think that individual matchup could decide tonight's result.
Let me ask you a question. Is Cayda going to win Freshman of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year?
I don't think he'll land Defensive Player of the Year, but I think he's already locked up Freshman of the Year.
So who's the best defender then, if it's not Cayda?
Probably Cody Martin still.
Yeah, that makes sense. He is a Wooden finalist or Naismith finalist, isn't it?
Yes, for Bob Cousy Award, I think.
Or Bob Cousy, sorry, I missed all those three big awards. There's so many awards for college basketball. Naismith, Cousy, all those. Okay, mm-hmm. I was just curious because he 2.5 blocks a game, pretty big deal. 9 rebounds, so.
Oh, he's an excellent defender.
Yeah.
I just don't think he probably has that name recognition compared to the upperclassmen. But he, I mean, his impact this year cannot be put into words for what Utah State's been able to accomplish.
Yeah, and he's been scoring a little bit more. He's what, about 10 points, just over 10, but he's getting well above that pretty much almost every game except that New Mexico game where he played decent amount of minutes. But so I think those two are the big, those two players, huge matchup. Braxton, if he can score a ton of points, and we haven't mentioned Sam Merrill, who might be the, is he the, maybe the best player overall on this floor tonight?
I think so. Yeah, if not Huggins, but like again, there's a lot of good players on this court tonight, so it'll be fun to watch. At least four players that will probably end up on either the first or second team when it's all said and done at the end of the year.
So watch this game. It is a later tip. It's, well, I guess 7:30 Pacific, not late, but if you're anywhere else, it's a little bit later. Look for your AT&T Sports Network, or for you out there in Northwest, Root Sports.
That's right.
You could stream it if you are not. And it's broadcast pretty much everywhere. Like, I think there's like AT&T Southwest. It's broadcast a decent amount of the area. But if you're out of the market area and you're listening to this, and I guess, hey, Brandon, if you're listening, you could probably catch it online if you want to watch it. Streaming there in western part of the state of Florida. So you can check that out. I did put the links on the preview I did really quick early moments ago. But just watch the game. Tune into it. Don't watch the extended highlights. Try to watch the full game and let us know, because this should be one of a more pretty exciting game. So, who do you got?
I think I'm going to go with Utah State.
Utah State, because they've just been playing a bit better, you believe?
Yeah, I think. I mean, again, this could go either way, but I think I like the way Utah State matches up with Fresno State. And again, I know that they dropped the first matchup, but they've been playing really good recently, and I like how Cada matches up against the Fresno State front court.
All right, going with Utah State as well in a close one. Basically the same things, partly because they've been playing better. They had a big lead last time they played against this team. It kind of, not I guess, sort of blew a double-digit lead with, what, five, was it 5 minutes left, 6 minutes left? They're up by 12, I believe it was. And they just kind of let that slip away. So I think Aggies will win, and Aggies will probably be the number two seed overall. So there you go.
Yeah, that's just so impressive with what Craig Smith has done. The team picked ninth in the preseason, have a very legitimate chance of finishing second.
Let me ask you this one really quick. I know Musselman's doing great. Is he coach of the year no matter what, essentially, if they have one loss in league play? I mean, yeah, just the one loss. Or would your reward stay if Craig Smith does get second place in the conference?
Well, I certainly don't think that Musselman will be a unanimous choice. As long as Utah State finishes out the season as they've started it.
Do they consider postseason or just regular season? I forget.
Just regular season, I believe.
What if Utah State beats Nevada?
Ooh, there's a reasonable case to go Craig Smith, even if that doesn't happen. But I don't know. I think it's still tough with Musselman because he's just put together such a fantastic season. If they enter the NCAA tournament with one loss, it would just be so hard to not give him Coach of the Year.
Okay. It's always that debate. Is it crushing expectations or winning the league in a dominant fashion?
It's tough, yeah, but it's if you want to make an argument for both, I would definitely not disagree with it.
Because if you look really quick, we'll get to the other game that's Tuesday night. Just New Mexico has Nevada has one league loss. Utah State has two. So technically they would tie for first place if it were to somehow Utah State runs the table and Nevada's only loss is to Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be Mountain West champs, right?
That's true. And if Utah State is able to win Tuesday night against Fresno State, they have a legitimate chance at potentially tying things up in the Mountain West in that final week of the season against Nevada.
Oh, that'd be amazing. That'd be so.
That would make for a huge, huge matchup.
That would not help Utah State. We'll get to bracket stuff later, but they are inching closer to being considered as an at-large team. So, let's go to the next game really quickly. New Mexico, San Diego State. In our power rankings, people are finally – I noticed when everybody kind of – I don't do it too often, but you do it. A few other guys like Jesse, Brandon, I know Michael did it this week too, put out his rankings for the power poll. A lot of Aztecs fans are liking what they're seeing there because they are actually playing well.
They're inching up to what we thought they were going to be heading into the season. They're still not there yet, but playing better basketball of late.
Yeah, they beat UNLV. Cool. Air Force and beat San Jose State. So before we get too excited, the reason they moved up, partly because they're winning, And as you mentioned last show, Eli, that's their first multi-game winning streak against D1 opponents since the end of November.
Yeah. Hey, better late than never, right?
Just like last year, right? Just roll out and kind of win like 8 of 10 or something, 10 of 12 down the stretch.
Have you seen what KenPom has projected for San Diego State the rest of the season?
No, I have not.
They're favored to win 2 more games.
Oh, really? 2?
Yeah, yikes.
Whoa.
Against Boise State, home against San Jose State.
How are they favored against Boise State? They're all like
9%.
I know, I'm just saying, but then they're road dogs to CSU. Interesting. Dang, that's not like good. Maybe their fourth position is temporary. But they've been playing well, so it's good. Yeah. It's getting the wins matters, right? It's just I don't care who you beat, just beat the teams.
Exactly, yeah. And you have to take care of the teams that are weaker than you, and that's what they have been doing these last few games. So that's at least a good thing if you're a San Diego State fan, because losing to teams like Brown and Air Force and Boise State by 24, that wasn't going to cut it. So they're basketball now.
No, definitely not. It's just like I'm kind of half kidding there, but with our power rankings kind of back on that, it's more of nobody's beating everybody, or you're going to 1-1 every week. And so it's like, not that they moved up by default, but they moved up because they won, but they're also doing what other teams aren't doing, which is winning. And so it's just kind of, it's so difficult to figure out for half the year. It's good. It's easy when a team wins like 3 in a row. It's just like, all right, they're moving up.
Yeah. So
New Mexico.
New Mexico has been so hit or miss. San Diego State, still in the grand scheme of things, they've been really inconsistent too. Mm-hmm. KenPom has this game decided by 1 point. I just feel like with the way that the conference has been going this season, doesn't this just feel like a game that will be determined by like a 15 or 20 point margin? Just because it wouldn't make any sense.
And New Mexico getting the win, right, too, on top of that.
Yeah, of course.
Because New Mexico, since that Nevada win, they've only beaten one team. It's Wyoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They got blown double-digit loss. Every single game has been, am I correct on that? Every single game except for Utah State is double-digit loss.
Yes, correct.
Correct. And so that would be something if a Paul Weir were to pull Rabbit out and say, all right, Mathis, score 35 points for us tonight.
Yeah.
Do this. It's like Aztec should win. You said they're favored. What are they favored by?
New Mexico's favored by 1 point.
Wait, New Mexico's favored?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. It's tough.
I'm flabbergasted because is this wait, hold on. This is also a road game, so I guess there's a tiny bit with that. But Lobos have won like one. They're like 1-6, 1-7. Come on, how KenPom, Pomeroy? What are you doing?
But do you want to guess the percentage that New Mexico has to beat Nevada on the road on Saturday?
On Saturday, mm-hmm. New Mexico, you're saying?
Yes, New Mexico at Nevada.
I'm not looking at it now. I moved away from the page because I think Monday. I want to say 8%.
3%.
3%.
The 7% chance to defeat Utah State on the road on February 20th.
But so, they're yeah. Okay, speaking of that really quick, end of the season, Aztecs at Nevada. Mm-hmm. Nevada is 7% chance for Aztecs. So by that, you would think Aztecs would be like a 52% favorite to win this game tonight.
Yeah, you would think. Interesting.
So who has more talent? Is it New Mexico or San Diego State? I think it's the Aztecs.
I would probably go with New Mexico just because I think that they're a bit deeper. San Jose State starting five is certainly better, but I think New Mexico has a bit more depth.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
Let's see real quick. I'm going to pull up our good old, since you pulled on me, I'm going to pull up the BPI.
Oh, boy.
I'll give you no clues. Take your guess.
For tonight's game, San Jose State, New Mexico?
At New Mexico, at the Pit, at 9 p.m. local time, so a little bit later there. ESPN2 tip-off.
I would say New Mexico, 58% favorite.
No. Aztecs are a favorite. Basically a toss-up, 50.8.
okay.
Yeah, so almost 51%. So
both of tonight's games are coin flips, basically.
Pretty much. I really think the San Diego State should win. Like you said, McDaniel is the best player out there.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing: New Mexico's proven to have the talent, but it's been one game. You can't keep going back. Well, you beat Nevada by 20 or 30 points. That's it's too far back, and they've done nothing to say they're that same team. And so, like, while the crazy the Mountain West is, New Mexico could win. Aztec should win by at least 10 points, in my opinion. And they should be able to keep them at bay away for most of the time and say, sorry, Lobos. But it'll be sort of close, but it'll be kind of a quasi-comfortable win for the Aztecs. Like, they'll be up by a couple here or there. Lobos may go up by a couple here or there, but the Aztecs will slowly pull away. I kind of think it'll be one of those games. Because New Mexico does have players to stick around and play well. And if things go perfectly right, win. Because we've seen Aztecs down 30 points multiple times and gets multiple teams. So it's not like they're perfect by any means, but I just think Aztecs have too much.
Does it concern you at all with San Diego State? Their perimeter defense can be a little shaky, and they do allow opponents to shoot a lot of threes. Does that concern you at all with the way New Mexico can heat up from the perimeter?
Yeah, assuming they can make it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because
Mathis can really heat up.
Mm-hmm. That's why I was kind of half kidding with Mathis, really, give him 35 points. But we've seen Xavier, I think, hit him up from three a ton in that Maui invite.
Mm-hmm.
Couple teams. So, yeah, that's always a concern, because if you let teams shoot threes and make threes, you're in trouble. And that's probably the best chance, the most likely chance Lobos to win, because that perimeter defense is a bit shaky.
Mm-hmm.
And also I was going to look at that mouse real quick. Never mind. I'm going to pass on that.
So I have a quick stat for you.
What do you got?
I guess that's 2-point percentage. Well, in San Jose's losses this year, their 2-point percentages allowed 59.4, 51.9, 58.6, 59.3, 53.3, 72.4,
Ooh.
45.2, and 40.7. So the three-point line can be a deciding factor, but it looks like two-point percentage is almost just as important.
It is. So I guess basically if they can hold them to just under 50, they'll be fine?
Yeah, it looks that way.
Which really could be said for any team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's nothing special, but obviously at 70% range, whew, that's a tough one to beat.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Let's we already kind of went over the power ranking thing, so we're going to skip on that. Anything interesting the rest of the week? We have a few more games, because we are doing it on a day earlier, so there's a bit more time to say, hey, we got the Tuesday games, we got the Wednesday games, so people can be prepared for the week. Wednesday, there's what, three games? Am I correct on that?
Yes.
So when we talk about Wednesday, as I'm trying to scroll through here because my internet is being so lovely, I don't care about any game on Wednesday too much. Kidding.
Do you give Colorado State any chance against Nevada?
No. Here's the thing. Rams have been playing better, because you can't deny they also were the big movers. They moved up, what, three spots in our power poll, two spots? They're sitting at 6-9, I believe, from 8. They have been playing better. They do have a winning record overall. Am I correct on that? They're 11-8, I believe. Did I type that in properly?
For Colorado State, they're 9-13.
Oh, I need to fix that. Whoops. I thought I fixed all that. So no, sorry, I'll fix that in a moment. These people are complaining if they have been. So, but they have been playing better. But yet, remember, Eli, they lost by 40 points. 40 points.
They did.
And think about it. We should talk about Nevada a bit, because we kind of been saying the past couple of shows, give me a string of convincing wins where there's no struggle at all. And their past handful of games have been just that,
mm-hmm.
where they've been winning by this one of this game too, this 40-point victory. They haven't been really playing bad in the first half, where they're staying close with inferior competition. These past few games are what they should have been doing all year, or at least I'd say 80% of their games, because nobody on their schedule is really that great who they've played overall, and that's some concern. Like, I did an AP post. I'm like, let me talk about this guy from New York Post. He claims to cover college basketball. He claims to watch Nevada a lot, but says they're not a very good team. Or, sorry, they're not a top 10 team.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Which,
I mean, that's going to happen. Nevada's going to receive the Gonzaga-type treatment. It's almost inevitable now.
They're not even getting that, but, like, their past few games, really quickly, I finally got my schedule here. Since that narrow win versus Boise State, they've beaten Air Force by 15, CSU by 40, UNLV by 17, then Boise by 20. And so these past four games of what they should have been doing. But back to that guy's like, oh, like, he's like, Gonzaga gets scheduled Duke. They get scheduled Arizona. I'm like, get back to us if Nevada does this for like 20 straight years.
Yeah, exactly. Gonzaga has been relevant nationally for 20 years. That's a terrible assessment there.
Yeah, Nevada's had they've went on the road a ton this year. Like, they played Grand Canyon and Phoenix and went to LA to play USC and Arizona State. They played a decent amount of road games. Schedule could be a tad better, but it's hard to get teams to play. Like, well, why should Arizona nearby play Nevada? Why should, you know what I mean, why should these better teams play them? But it's just a dumb argument because Gonzaga's been losing to Gonzaga is not a big deal. Nevada's only been really good for these 2 years, and then a decade ago with Trent Johnson and like those guys. And so it's like, you can't just schedule, give me a home and home or 2-for-1 for, you know what I mean, for with Arizona or Texas or even, or you know what I mean, or Kentucky. It's like, that's not how it works, folks. It's like, yeah, would St. John's want to come out to play here? Probably not. No, even though, because they're pretty good this year. But it's like, come on. I read that. I'm like, you can make the argument they're not a number 6 team just because of no quadro and wins and all that stuff. And like, some people have them as like a 4-6 seed for the tournament wise, but they're probably going to, whatever, finish like a 4 seed. But all you can do is win, and they're winning. If they could win like this past 4 games, I think CSU, here's what I'll say, CSU will not lose by 40 points.
Yeah,
is that fair enough to say?
That's certainly fair, and I think the home crowd will be, I think, pretty solid on Wednesday night. I wouldn't be shocked if the game is decided by single digits, because CSU can really score the basketball, but their defense just it remains a mess, and Nevada could heat up super easily, get easy baskets, and it wouldn't surprise me if this one got out of hand again, but to be decided 100-60, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's, and why Braves have been playing better, we mean better by winning 2 of 3 and almost beating Boise State. So
yeah,
so it's
that's true.
We'll see. I don't know. We'll see what they can do, but it'll be closer than that. It'll be more competitive. But I still think it's a double digit win easily for Nevada. I think they're finally hitting that stride of let's go, we're winning, we're going to keep going and cruising until March comes around.
The biggest deficit Nevada's faced over their last 3 games, they trailed Boise State 3-0, 59 seconds into the game.
Whew.
So they're certainly playing better basketball now, and they're, what is it, they're favored in each of the remaining 9 games on their conference schedule. And besides the Utah State game, they go on the road, it's either 80% or better. So definitely hitting their stride right now and could enter the NCAA tournament with 1 loss. That'd be pretty impressive.
All right. Okay, yeah, definitely. Let's stick with Nevada here. They host New Mexico. How many points will they beat New Mexico by?
27? Make it even? I don't know. That one could get really ugly.
I think they'll want to win by as many points as possible.
Yeah, I do too, because that's what happened on the first time they matched up.
Oh, that. And it's just the thing. It's like the way the Mexico, like we already mentioned, you already heard our thing in Lobo. There's no reason to backtrack and mention it again, but it's just a game where it's on CBS there. It's a 3 p.m. local tip on CBS Sports Network. Excuse me, let me clarify. $51 to go in if you're interested. Just saying.
All right.
No, not too bad. So I seriously think Nevada, and combining the two schools, I think they'll win easily by 15 versus New Mexico, and it won't even be close.
I do too. Yeah.
The rest of the games on Saturday, you got San Jose State, Boise, whatever.
Is San Jose State going to win a game?
Oh, man, I don't know. They are one of, I saw some map, they're like 1 of 5 teams without a win, right, in conference play?
I believe so, yeah.
Will they get a win? It's not going to be versus Boise State, I'll tell you that.
Home against Wyoming, March 6th?
Has to be.
Please, just get one win.
Are they favored in that game?
They are, 51%. Cutting it close.
51. You know, it wouldn't shock me if they beat New Mexico at home. Sorry, Lobos, but I'm just saying. They've been playing so poorly. That would not overly shock me yet. Lobos and KenPom has them as a 9-point underdog versus the playing at home versus the Lobos there, the Fighting Paul Weirs.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, my bold predictions called for at least one San Jose State conference victory. That was looking pretty good in mid-December, but it is not looking too great right now.
I know they had. They also lost double overtime that Air Force game. What do the Spartans have to do, like just write it out for 5 years and hope they get something? Because they've had good players in town, like Brandon Clark and a few other guys, but they're out and about playing well other places.
It's hard for this program to retain talent because, as we've mentioned a handful of times this year, what this San Jose State team could have been had their players not transferred, they could have had a legit top 4, top 5 roster in the conference this season.
Yeah.
But whenever a player is well known, usually they transfer. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens again this off season. And it's too bad because I think this program is capable of accomplishing a lot more than what they've done since they've transfer to the Mountain West, but right now it's not getting done, and this team just has so many issues, and for the most part hasn't even been competitive. They did have that double overtime game against Air Force at home, but every other game has been a double-digit loss in conference play.
They got to keep Perlow there for a couple of years. You can't just let him go after 4 years.
Yeah.
It's like when me and Matt talk about football, like Kentucky had Mark Stoops, their coach, has been there. Because Kentucky football has never been good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, don't do the turnover thing after 4 years or 5 years after the one contract. He's been there finally, I think, is what, year eight, and he took them pretty far, and they were pretty good this year. Not to say San Jose State will pull up and be a 21 team after 6 years, 7 years, but you can't just rotate coaches over and over after 5 years.
Yep.
You got to hopefully, there's circumstances that vary. If you see some improvement, like, okay, say they win, what are they at, one win this year, is that correct? Two wins? Three?
Two D1 wins, yeah.
Two D1 wins, yeah, the Cookman NAU win. So let's say they pull off one this year, they end up with four, they go to 10, they get to 13, schedule the right way to help them out. Like, their schedule was fine this year, like who they decide to play was very friendly for them, playing teams like Southern Utah, Weber State, Bakersfield, Indiana State, a few toughies, Stanford, Cal, and St. Mary's. But they scheduled properly to hopefully get some wins, because they had a few close losses, like the Bakersfield, Central Michigan, 1-point loss, 2-point loss, single-digit loss to Santa Clara. So they've had single-digit to Weber State, Southern Utah. They're, not that they're getting closer, but scheduled that way to build up some confidence to maybe next goal next year would be what, to get to 10 wins, I'd say?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. And a lot of people will joke. I know people have just come up with all these different things about San Jose State, but if you look back at what they were in 2017 under Dave Wojcik,
mm-hmm.
San Jose State, mid-February, they were 13-10, even in the conference at a 6-6 record. They were right in a four-game winning streak, defeated UNLV twice, New Mexico, and San Diego State. So those are the three notable teams in the Mountain West. And that was about as good as the program had been in years. And obviously it's unfortunate with what happened with Wojcik, and he had to resign over the summer. But San Jose State at that point was capable of being a decent competitive team in the Mountain West. And things have gone south since then, because they've had to hire a new head coach and get a new coaching staff and all the roster turnover that's happened since. But they are capable of getting decent and competitive in the Mountain West.
Yeah, because they have Brandon Clark and Ryan Welge there, who both are doing pretty good at their new schools at the moment. So it's like, it's possible. It's not out of the question. It's possible, but it's tough.
Yeah.
But you think, too, like, if you're out in California, it's like a recruiting thing, too. There's so many good, talented players in California, even though there's so many schools, UCLA, who's usually pretty good, not this year. They got a new head coach coming down their way. But, like, with Stanford's usually pretty good. Like, there's enough. Well, they're not, I guess, traditionally pretty good. The state's big enough, population-wise, big enough. Enough talent, northern part of the state, southern part of the state. If you think about it now, the state of California basketball, it's not good. Mm-hmm. Who's the best team in the state? St. Mary's, probably?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because Pac-12's down. You know what I'm saying? Stanford, UCLA, new head coach for the Bruins, USC.
Fresno State, maybe?
I guess, yeah, Fresno State. Okay, yeah, sorry, I forgot about them. But I was thinking about outside of the teams. Like, Fresno or St. Mary's are probably the two best teams. San Francisco's doing better in WCC. They've turned it around. But overall, with the bigger schools, traditionally, like, even Aztecs aren't playing as what they used to be. They've taken this little step down. So with the whole state basically at D1 level not playing to – they're not all at their best at once, but it seems like right now this is probably the worst the state's been in a very long time. Now's the time, even though Spartans are part of that, they're at the bottom as well. You would think there's a way, like, hey, come here, you'll play more, you'll get in instead of going to San Francisco or going to some other school in the state, Bakersfield, Long Beach State. Like, the whole state's not very good for the top teams, so it should be a time to maybe make that pitch, come here and play right now, because UCLA, USC, you're still going to get the good players.
Mm-hmm.
They're still going to get players better than that. They may not get the top of the top. They'll, say, get the second-tier four-star guys, which kind of pushes everybody down who's still good, who wants to stay in state. So there's a chance at this point with how the rest of the state's been playing for them to maybe over-recruit a little bit here or there to maybe get one of those guys that's either overlooked or UCLA can't get their number one choice because they get their number two choice and it pushes that talent down to where a guy wants to stay in that area. Or say a guy wants to go to St. Mary's and, well, sorry, not going here. Okay, go to San Jose. You're in the same region. You know what I mean? That there, I think that's a legit possibility to take advantage of the whole state being down to recruit in-state. So,
yeah, I don't disagree. And you don't need to recruit like UCLA to win the Mountain West. You can win the conference with three stars and quality JUCO transfers or D1 transfers, which is what Nevada is doing right now.
Yeah. So, my point is that with these best teams still not getting those best players, it may put – it's just saying, like, okay, I'm not saying you compete with UCLA, but if UCLA is not – like, they're not getting the same top guy, they'll take other players. Maybe that'll cut into them, but my point is, like, with all these other programs down, you have a case to make. Come build something here. It's easier to build something here than it is at UCLA.
Yeah.
Because definitely. Even if you're a high three-star guy, you may not play for a year and a half. And so that's kind of my point of getting at. There's opportunity to take advantage of other programs being down as well. So
definitely.
It's not Spartan talk for a while. Is that quota for 2 weeks? I don't know. Oh, it's got to make the teams interesting. They've shown to be a team. Like, who knows? Like I said, they would be with probably Fresno State, Utah State, had nothing changed, which is hard to say that nothing would change. But the rest of any other game on Saturday, I guess Fresno, UNLV, maybe. Utah State, San Diego State, that's a big one because I would say, like we mentioned, if Aztecs are going to prove something,
now's the time to do it.
Beat a good team. Like, you moved up because you're beating teams you should beat and finally are beating. And that's one to watch, even though it's on how's it only on ESPN3? Who came up with that decision?
Meh. Oh, well.
You love that. It's like, you
know, wasn't me.
Turn on my Roku, my Chromecast. I'm like, how do I find ESPN3? If you want, alternative deal. It's only $9 to go to the game.
Yeah, fly me down there. Yeah,
fly down, go to that game. That's not a bad. Let's do this real quick. Let's play BPI here.
Okay.
Not BPI. Yeah, it is BPI.
For San Diego State, Utah State.
Yeah. First off, who do you think is favored in this game?
Utah State.
Okay. Got one right. Go.
There we go.
Next.
63% Aggie favorites.
Not quite. 56%.
Oh, tighter than I thought.
A little bit. It's, yeah. I guess with the Aztecs playing better, expect Utah State to win just because they're probably going to beat Fresno. They're going to be on a 7-game winning streak. Aztecs will be playing pretty well for themselves, but overall, like you mentioned, what Aztecs do or don't do defensively. Like, if Sam Merrill gets hot from three, it's over.
Yeah.
Or let me just say this. If anybody gets somewhat hot from three-point range, it's over.
Exactly. Hey, Spectrum's back, though. I saw some clips this week of videos and such. It's getting pretty rowdy in there. That's exciting to see.
What do you know what – do you have it really quick? What time is that Nevada-Utah State game?
Do you have that I believe you? I clicked on it earlier this podcast. I think it was like 6:30 on CBS Sportsnet. Excuse me, 5:30 Pacific on CBS Sportsnet.
I'm still debating if I should go to that game.
Do it.
It's about a 95-minute drive. Yeah, maybe it's a 6:30 tip. Maybe I get home like a 10 or 11. We'll see. I'll see if I can get that done.
Because it
would be, especially if it's a co-champs on the line. You know what I mean? If the championship is there. Sure, I'll do my best effort.
There we go.
It's just a long drive.
It is a Saturday though.
It is a Saturday, I know. It's true. It's not a 9 p.m. local tip. It's not the Tuesday, Wednesday game. It is Saturday, late afternoon, early evening. I'll see what I can do. But Aztecs game, like, do you give any confidence Aztecs, or is it a wait and see before we think they could beat Utah State? Because we're not going to chat between then or now. Like, if they beat New Mexico, does that give you any more or less confidence they could beat Utah State at home?
There are a lot of teams that could beat New Mexico right now.
That's my point. Does it change anything? Probably not.
And the way the conference has been going, how much does winning by 20 actually mean? Because every team's been capable of doing that, minus San Jose State. So I don't know. I don't think my perception would really change after Tuesday's game. San Jose State is probably still not the favorite against Utah State this weekend, and I still believe the Aggies will probably win that game, maybe by 5 or 6 points.
Okay. I could see it because playing at Vejas is still a pretty big deal. Is Utah State really quick? Are they still – well, I guess it doesn't matter because they're number two team right now if they win their number two team. So let's do this. Let's go to some bracket matrix stuff because I need to start doing our weekly bracket post. First off, bracketmatrix.com, as we both know, great resource, helpful quite a bit. And they go through, how many brackets do they have now? 92 brackets. That's a lot of brackets.
That is a lot of brackets.
Are these all quality brackets for the most part?
I mean, some of them are kind of interesting, but
there was the
people
one that
have
had,
their own way of doing things.
I had Aztecs as 11 seed. Remember that last week?
Yeah. I mean, there's always going to be a couple like that.
So really quick, Nevada is a 4 seed. They're basically average of 4.22, which there are actually 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams in the 4.0 to 4.99 range. Is that probably about right, just because their SOS is not very good, no Q1 wins, their net's what are they at, 18 or something like that, barely top 20?
Yeah, it's fair, and I'm really starting to get a little nervous about Nevada's seeding, because if you go and actually find their team sheet, there isn't a single result that's under that Q1 quadrant. So it's a very much back-ended slate for Nevada. Their strength of schedule, at least non-conference, is pretty good at 43 because they've played so many games on the road. But with the Pac-12 really bottoming out this year with Arizona State, USC, and Utah not performing as we imagined heading into the season, none of those games fall under that first quadrant, and that's what Nevada was hoping would happen by the time Selection Sunday came around. So there's a decent chance that Nevada is sitting on Selection Sunday without a single win in that first quadrant, and I don't know if they're capable of picking up a top 4 seed if that's the case.
Where do you, because you mentioned me earlier offline, like on Saturday, I believe it was Saturday, right? The CBS, they start releasing the top 16.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is it from the official selection committee, right? Is that how this is?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's like a little mock 16 team bracket.
Will Nevada be a four? At least, will Nevada be featured in that?
I think so. Yeah, they should be on the 4 line for now. But as the season progresses, we're still, what did you say, like 6 weeks, 5 weeks from Selection Sunday? Mm-hmm. A lot of the power conference teams are going to pick up Quadrant 1 wins just by beating up on each other. And Nevada doesn't have that luxury. Their toughest game the rest of the season is at Utah State. And if they don't win that game, they're probably going to be without a Quadrant 1 victory on Selection Sunday.
So Quadrant 1 victory, it's a road top 40 win. Or no, excuse me, home top 40 win. Neutral top 60, right?
And then it's road. It's home 1 through 30. Neutral 1 through 50 and away 1 through 75.
So that Arizona State game's not a quadrant one?
No, Arizona State.
Oh, neutral.
60th.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's neutral. Thing. Okay. Dang. So is this our time to rant about you can play nobody in non conference and be from the Big 12 or ACC and be fine?
Pretty much. Yeah. This would be the time to do that.
Every time. I always hear it from Gary Parrish. I say it to all the time. It's not fair, but it's what happens. And that's also why it's like, for seriously, what if 61 make a difference than 50 a lot higher? Would that make the world difference? Oh, you got a Q1 win because you beat Arizona State 60. Oh, no Q1 wins, Arizona State 62 or 61. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, is it that big a difference?
Well, that's the other thing that bothers me so much about this whole quadrant system. And I know they tried to build it so that it makes a lot of sense in terms of whether you beat a team on a neutral site or on the road or at home and whatnot. But just these cutoffs, even to the naked eye, it's going to change people's perception about what actually happened. Because a team might be, as you said, if Arizona State is 51st as opposed to 50th,
yeah,
and that falls under a Q2 instead of a Q1. And I know everyone knows this and acknowledges that. But even when you see that on a piece of paper, if you see a team on the left side as opposed to the right side, you're obviously going to think much more highly of the team on the left side, even if that designation is made by just a decimal point in terms of NET or whatever the evaluation is. So that's obviously a huge problem with that, and that's also something that I'm going to address in that article that I'm writing about how I would fix the process.
Yeah, if you look at the – because they probably look at teams, don't put the team name – you always see the blind resume stuff. Oh, they have 0 quadrant 1 wins, and this other team has 3. But those, say, all their quadrant 2 wins are within 5 spots of, let's just say there's a home game, a neutral game, and a road game, all within 3 spots of being a Q1 win.
Yep.
It's like, that's not to say it's not a Q1 win for sure, but just looking at it, 0 to 3, where had, say, the team they beat had one more victory or lost by four fewer points in half a dozen games, they would be Q1 to win.
Yeah, and that's always going to be the problem that you have when you run a quadrant-based system. It's like they're just the cutoffs between what's good, what's great, like all that type of deal. It's a major problem that I think needs to be resolved. But again, how do you resolve that? So it's tough. But when it comes to teams like Nevada that don't have those tough opponents on their schedule, it really makes things pretty dicey on Selection Sunday when they need to pick up a quality seed.
Yeah, you gotta look at numbers at some level, but it's just the black and white. It's like with the college football playoff, their committee, winning record, not a winning record, which basically means if you beat all these 6-6 teams, that looks, or 7-5 teams, it looks great. But if it counts the same as beating a 6-6 as it does like a 10-2 team.
Mm-hmm.
It counts the same. Or if you lose to a 5-7 team or an 0-12 team, it still counts the same essentially on that eye. That's still pretty blatant error, or it's hard to fix, but you should contextualize. Yes, it's a Q1 win, but when it's close, I don't know what you do. You just got to weight it differently, I guess. You don't want to get too bogged down in like where your number's at for who's watched the games and get the record and how much you're winning by and where you're winning by, but you should be able to check and see they are super close to getting Q1 wins. These teams are nearly there. Like, is there a difference, like I said, between 40 and 51? Probably not.
Yeah.
So Utah State, they are considered as the first four out here on this bracket. They are only in 19 brackets, which is interesting, whereas Temple is at 42, but barely above Utah State. How does that work?
I think, again, it comes down to the number of quality victories. Temple does have a win over Houston, which is a top 10 team right now, and Utah State's best victory is a neutral site win over St. Mary's. And they have just one victory against the top 120 in NET right now. So, yeah, it's the brackets might say that right now that Utah State is in contention. I'm really not buying it, though. A win over St. Mary's isn't going to get you in the tournament.
My point, like the number of brackets, as I said, the first four out here at Bracket Matrix, it's Seton Hall, who's in 51 brackets. I guess it goes by average. I guess that's the only reason they're there. Because I think they need to do a better job here. Maybe average your number and brackets you're in. Because Seton Hall's 51 brackets, Temple 42, Utah State 19. They have Clemson 15. But if you look down, like if you go between other receiving votes, Murray State's in 40. It's probably because the at-large are the one bid for their conference.
Mm-hmm.
But Bowling Green's in more brackets than them. You have Bucknell in more brackets than them. Why, it doesn't make sense. Even though, yeah, Bucknell, their average seeding is only a 15.8 or what, 15.6. I know that's partly because they play in the Patriot League and they're only going to get one bid. It's clear that Utah State shouldn't be the first four out. They're just first four out because if they're going to get in, they're going to be between what, a 10 and 14 seed.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And so do you give them I basically give them no chance. I see all these brackets saying first four out bubble team. They're like a more work to be done. But their work to be done is winning out, including a win over Nevada. Then I'd put them in consideration.
If Utah State were to run the table and get to the conference tournament final and lose, they probably have a shot.
Oh, just a shot, Steven, with that?
Yeah, I think you have a shot. But look at what's happened to St. Mary's these last couple of years, or some teams out of the MAC that entered their conference tournament with a gaudy record.
Stick with St. Mary's. Come on. We know that. That's the case. They don't leave their home court unless they're forced to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's not that's true, but that's not really the case with Utah State this year.
Exactly.
But I guess, like, they just don't have that quality victory because they haven't beaten anyone out of a high major conference. They almost beat Arizona State, lost to BYU, almost beat Houston, but it just comes down to quality victories, and Utah State doesn't have them, so if they run the table, get to the conference tournament final, I think that they have an outside shot. But again, that's not going to get it done.
Because they're sitting at 17 wins, 20, counting here. This, I know, it's exciting. 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. They'd be 26-5 after the regular season with the win over Nevada. By the way, they'd have more Q1 wins in Nevada, so put them in, right?
True. I mean, hey,
just
<that's>... Yeah.
So I put them at 25. Right now they're projected 24-7. So if they're 25-6, if somehow that happens, they would win 27-6. They'd be 27-8. That wouldn't be enough to get them in? assuming they lose to Nevada in the tournament final?
I don't think it's enough to get them in, because I just think the power conference teams will just continue to beat up on each other and get quality victories. And, I follow Purdue basketball, of course. Every time that they hit the floor, they will pick up a victory against a Q1 or Q2 opponent, no matter what. And Mountain West teams just don't have that luxury.
How do you fix – I know it's a big question, but how does that get done? How does that change besides just scheduling better non-conference?
I think that's pretty much all you can do.
You know what should be done? Maybe this will be an off-season article or podcast we could do. I saw something in football. We'll wrap up here in a second because we're getting close to that 50-minute mark here. So Stuart Mandel over at The Athletic just takes questions weekly. A lot of people do that stuff. He mentioned, somebody goes, if there's one thing you could change in college football, what would it be? And he says, hold off on scheduling one non-conference game and then do some sort of like draft or some sort to put up the best matchup.
That's interesting.
And then I also saw the same thing. I think, don't you do stuff with the Athletic Director website?
Yes.
ADU or something? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Somebody did something a while ago about just do a draft for the whole non-conference season for football, which would be like the World Cup draw. Very exciting. Teams can block here and teams could block like, I'm not playing this team, and that'd be pretty exciting. Awesome TV event. But I saw, just brought up two things. I saw something on Twitter, because they used to have the bracket thing, was the Bracket Buster, which turned into a weird thing that didn't really help teams all that much, just because it didn't work out all that great. It got watered down where essentially you're playing a team who's 80, your number 80 RPI versus number 100 RPI. What's the big deal? It wasn't really changing that much because it got too big. When there was like the four or five games, it was like Gonzaga versus Nevada this year. That'd be a pretty big deal, but they don't really need it. You know what I mean? They're already high enough. Why can't there be – I know we tossed around the Pac-12 Mountain West Challenge, something like that. But why can't – I saw two things. One was a kind of like the old Bracket Buster where you take like the 16 best, like a tournament weekend, like one of those exempt tournaments where it's all – the non-power teams play against each other, like only 16, so it's a limited amount of games. But realistically, what I would really like to do is have – I don't know how you do it. It's easy to do if you think about it. There's so many non-conference games. Why can't there be – I don't know, just you set aside one or two games where you have to play, like make it beneficial for both sides to give a chance to play a team for a better conference somehow. You know what I mean? Like I know it's a lot of logistics and stuff. You have the – Big 10 ACC or Big 12 SEC challenge, all those things. It's not necessarily a challenge, but allow for – I'm not saying like San Jose State plays Duke, because what's the point of that?
Yeah.
It's going to hurt Duke. It's going to hurt – well, it could hurt Duke more. There's the balance of power of who wins in that game. If somehow the Spartans pull off this major upset over a top team or beating like Tennessee or Kentucky or something. But couldn't there be a way to schedule like maybe – oh, this would be good. I got it right here. Here's a billion dollar idea for you, Eli.
Okay.
So wasn't there a challenge like 2 weeks ago in college basketball?
Yeah, like Big 12 SEC.
Okay, Big 12 SEC. Why don't we – because people don't care about basketball, at least majority people, until basically now, February. So why not hold like right after Super Bowl or the week before or something, maybe right after – No, the week after would be perfect, because that's what that new American Football Alliance League, whatever it's called, the AAF, is doing. They're starting their season this week after Super Bowl. We want football? Here's football. It's on CBS. Week after, hold that weekend, because we have the mock selection committee, right? 16 teams. You take maybe 80 teams for being considered and have them play each other. Would that be worth it? To like 80 or 90 teams or 100 teams where you have a game, you do some sort of
That'd be cool.
I'm just saying, like, it wouldn't be, like, top to bottom, like, go through that. But, like, say you take 80 or 90 teams, like, realistic teams to be part of the NCAA tournament. It's all non-conference, so you could have, like, they might include Utah State. They're considered close. Like, how cool would it be if Utah State were to be able to play even a rematch versus Houston or play St. John's, or Houston plays a team in the top 20 – or Texas – or, excuse me, Utah State plays a team in the top 25. I don't think that would be that hard to pull off.
I don't think it would be that hard to pull off.
Teams might be against it, like Duke or Tennessee, but I'm just saying, if you're going to break up your – if you complain about breaking up non-conference play, look at that, what you just said, the Big 12 SEC Challenge last week. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, it would be.
Like maybe draw teams out of a hat or do some sort of random generator, and it'd have to make it worth it for the no, you don't have to. I was gonna say do it to Bracket Buster Day where next year you get the return game. No, screw it. It's just an extra game. You know what I mean? It's just one game. And maybe they could do it at a neutral site where there's a two or three games on a day, so it's something like that. You could put a bunch on TV. Like, that would be a pretty good idea, I think.
Yeah, I like that idea. I think that that's certainly something that would improve some team schedules. And while you came up with that, I was just kind of brainstorming myself and thought of something that was kind of interesting, I think. You know roughly how NFL schedules are made, correct? Like how it's determined which teams play which, like the following season?
Yeah, what division you're playing, and if you're like what placement you are over like fourth or first place, you play all the fourth place teams, yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of came to mind. There are 32 conferences.
Love it. I know where you're going. Keep going. Perfect.
Yeah, so 32 conferences in college basketball. What I was thinking is you divide those 32 into four tiers. So you have your 1 through 8, 9 through 16, 17 through 24, and 25 through 32. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a rotational basis. So each team, like say we're talking to Mountain West. So Mountain West would play a team out of that first tier. Like let's say it's the SEC, a team out of the second tier. Let's say it's the A-10. Then Big West out of third tier, and I don't know, Big Sky out of the fourth tier. And then you play the team that you finish the same position as the previous season. So that will occupy four of your non-conference games, and this is all coming on the fly.
No, I see what you mean. Yeah, so you mean, so same, so say, maybe not same record, but same placement. So first place, let's just say West Coast and Mountain West are tied, say in the same quadrant. You have the eight teams, mm-hmm. and you want to play half of those?
Yeah.
And so if you're the first place in the Mountain West, you play first place, and maybe you do quadrants by four, not eight, and so just make it simpler.
Yeah,
so
that's good. Yeah,
whatever, just whatever. So you're within the four range. So first place plays first place in each three, so you get three non-conference games right there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why not? That's because scheduling sucks. There's teams like I know there's a scheduling website to schedule games. Coaches are scheduling games like when do college basketball schedules come out? Sometimes middle September it seems like there's a finalized schedule for teams.
Yeah,
right?
It can take a while. Yeah.
If you could. How much of a relief of a headache would that be if you could have three games in the books? You have usually your exempt tournaments, you know, a year or two ahead, typically the one or two you're going to be in. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you're going to play your rival if it's a non-conference, like Colorado State usually plays Colorado every year, Air Force, CU, you know what I mean? Like there's usually San Jose State will play Santa Clara and St. Mary's almost every year. That would be this. We got to do this for the offseason. We got to do it. This is really fun to do because
that'll be a fun project.
It would be great. I thought about the same thing for football because the Mandel thing and other stuff, but why not? What's like that would two things with my both ideas, they'll have great flaws and great benefits. It's only one game with my idea, which how much is one game going to help Nevada? Like we said, would Nevada getting that one Q1 win, say they get to play Iowa. That's their draw. Mm-hmm. Iowa's 20th in both bowls. Would that victory propel them to a 3 seed over a 5 seed?
I don't know.
But in your scenario, you have three games against teams which are probably, especially if you're top three in your league and the Mountain West is going to be, 10 to 15 every year, you're probably going to get, it's probably going to be a Q1 game each time, right?
Yeah.
Just about in that range. So I love it. These are great ideas. This is stuff we need to talk about more.
Okay. I'll do some brainstorming, some spreadsheet work on it and see what I can come up with.
Get out the Excel sheet. Go for
That's
it.
That's right.
No, but it's a good idea. It's like, why make it harder on yourself? Why schedule more difficultly?
And then you have like a few games you can play with and do whatever you want, whether you want to schedule some weaker teams at home or if you have a big neutral site matchup you want to do, then you can do that.
Yeah, you know who'd be up for this? Teams that like have to if you want to schedule, like Craig Thompson should be all over this because he harps, play better teams, and we want to get into any tournament games. West Coast Conference kept Gonzaga in place by an unbalanced schedule to not have to play the bottom teams, get a dub, basically a triple bye to the conference semifinals for the WCC. Yeah. And so this would fall into that same type of game plan. And heck, even if you – it's kind of like the conference challenges, but it's more unified across all of college hoops, which also – who wouldn't want to see? You already have these challenges, they could just kind of morph into that. Like, they already have Big 12, SEC, all these challenges going out there. They're probably going to be in the same tier almost every year. But who says you can't do both, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because how much easier is it to take away a non-conference game or two with those challenges they do? So
you would think. I mean, there's – and this conversation is good because I think it just points out a lot of things that can be done and can be improved. So, the more ideas we come up with things like this, I think it improves our idea of what could potentially happen in the future and improve college basketball as a whole. So this is good.
Can we send a consulting fee proposal to the Mountain West Conference about this?
Yes.
Or just Mark Emmert and get a six-figure consulting fee? Because, you know, teams – we mentioned the Rebel logo. Was that you and me? Were they – how much did that local design team get paid to make a failed logo? They still got paid their five figures probably.
Yeah. We need to do that, like make our own like NCAA consulting firm or something and just make a ton of money and not have to worry about anything.
Or it's like the producers. You make a play that fails but you still make money.
Yes.
A failing play on Broadway is better than could be better than a successful play that has long run.
Yeah.
So
you're right.
Okay, really quick, because we need to wrap up here because we went off the sidetrack, which is amazing because it's always fun. Because going game by game is it is what it is. So you're going to compare teams to Drake songs. How is this going to work?
Yeah, so so this is fun. I don't know, I feel like this is I don't know where this really came from. Maybe my passion for both Mountain West basketball and hip hop music. So
best combination ever. Like oil and water. Oil and water. Perfect combination.
That's right. Is there anything better than that? Yeah, so I will be coming out with an article this week, maybe this afternoon if I get around to it. But we have all 11 Mountain West teams that are being compared to Drake songs. Some popular Drake songs. I've got the song, I have a quick line, and then like a 2 to 3 sentence explainer. So,
you know what else you gotta do? You gotta make a Spotify playlist for people to tune into.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. I'll have to make a link on that.
Do that as well.
Yeah.
All right. Look for that. We have million-dollar ideas here. We like to have fun too. We do hardcore previews and stuff, and we also have fun with comparing Drake songs. And you know what? An idea I had with Matt. I heard this a while ago. I'm stealing it from somewhere. I forget where. But did you know? Because Yelp is a thing that people use sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go check out, because universities have Yelp reviews apparently. So I'm going to go scour how the Yelp reviews are for different universities within the conference.
Oh, gosh.
And just kind of see what we can find, whether it be the arena or maybe the school itself. And, you know what I should do? I just thought of it now, which is I don't have time for it. The second signing day for football is tomorrow. It's like, here's why you should come to school based on Yelp reviews.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Maybe I'll have time for it. It's signing day is Wednesday. Maybe I'll try to do that for signing day just because. I don't know if I'll get to it, folks. And
if you need help, let me know because that sounds like a fun project.
If not tomorrow, I don't know. We'll see. I don't want to rush it. So if I don't get to it for signing, national signing day for football, because that's Wednesday and it's Tuesday as we're recording this. So at worst, it'll be an off-season project, which will be fun. Actually, let's just stick with off-season project because we can always repurpose that later. So we'll do that down the road.
Okay.
And if you want
Sounds
to assist
good.
And help, it'll be so much fun. So here's our brainstorming. Nobody steal these ideas as we're talking out loud.
Yes. Yes. It's like our quarterly meeting.
Apparently. All right. We've got 1 hour, which is rare for basketball. But thanks for sticking with us. Hopefully you did and had some fun. Check us out at mwcwire.com. That's our website, MWCWire Twitter. You can download the podcast, you know, we're TuneIn, Stitcher. Basically, if you search Mountain West Wire Podcast, I'm pretty sure we're the first list that comes up because there's nothing else with our name.
Yeah, I would hope so.
We better come up with that. So, yeah, we're here for the stretch run for hoops. We'll be here every week, and we'll see you next time, folks.